Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of our Never Alone Faith Over Cancer podcast. Hi, I'm Blaine Millett, your host for our podcast channel, and I just want to say thank you for taking the time to join us today. I really appreciate you giving us some of your time, and I hope we're able to make your day just a little bit brighter. So in today's episode, we are in for another real treat. We get to hear the story of Greg's journey with cancer, and Greg is also a member of our online group and someone who has been dealing with the surprises that cancer can spring on us throughout our journey. And heavens knows we all get lots of surprises in our journeys with cancer. But as you'll hear, it came upon him as a complete surprise. And it was only certain symptoms that led to the discovery that he actually had cancer. But there's two other things that I think you will find really interesting in his story. First of all, he was a doctor. So he spent his entire career in the medical field, both from a practicing physician and emergency doctor, as well as an administrator. And even being in the field didn't make him immune to cancer or the surprises that cancer can bring to all of us. But the second thing that will be interesting for you is, and the word I would emphasize with Greg's story is convenience. Not from his cancer, but in his relationship with God. And while Greg is a solid believer in Jesus, his relationship before cancer had kind of become one of convenience. And I love how he openly talks about this, as I think it is something that many of us can relate to somewhere along our journey with cancer, or even our journey with life. I think you'll really enjoy his story from a variety of angles. So with that as a bit of a backdrop, let's dive in and listen to Greg as he shares about his story and about himself and his journey with cancer, and most importantly, his journey and relationship with Jesus. So without any further delay, here's Greg's story.
Hello, my name is Greg Taylor. I'm 73 years old, and I have multiple myeloma. I am so thankful and so grateful to be alive and to be able to have another day on this wonderful earth that God created, to be able to spend time with my family and friends. And I'm pleased to be able to share my story with you and let you know how God has intervened in my life in so many miraculous ways. So a little bit about myself. I was born in Eastern North Carolina in the coastal plain. For those of you who don't know that part of the country, it's a dry, sandy, flat area that's well known for farming. And in fact, both of my parents grew up on tobacco farms back in the 30s, before World War II. My parents met at a place called Sunnyside Oyster Bar, and it still exists today and is well known throughout the state of North Carolina. And they met right after World War II and became inseparable. I am an only child, and my parents gave me their undivided, devoted attention and did everything possible in their lives to give me opportunity in life. And they worked hard throughout their lives to make all of that happen. My father worked for the state, for the Employment Security Commission. My mother worked frequently as a clerical assistant and accountant in many positions. My parents were very bright, and again, from the time I was born They always instilled in me the belief that I could do and be whatever I wanted. My father had attended college for a couple of years, but did not graduate. And my mother had a high school education. But there was never any doubt that they would give me all the opportunities in the world for an education. And fortunately, I loved to learn from the time I was a small child. I can remember picking up world book encyclopedias that my parents borrowed money to buy for me even before I could read. But I will never forget sitting and going through those books. And just from the pictures alone, beginning to create this idea that the world is an extraordinary place. And I want to learn as much about it as I could. So, in high school, I'll have to admit, I did not study very hard. I didn't really know how to study, but I did make sufficient grades to get by. I spent a lot of time involved in high school activities. In fact, I was president of the student body, and I played basketball, not very well, but I loved sports and athletics. And those seemed to be more my priorities at that stage in my life. Somehow, fortunately, I was lucky enough to get into the University of North Carolina. And along the way, when I was about 15 or 16, I had come to the realization that I was not going to be a professional athlete. And plan B was to become a physician. So I went to UNC with the express goal of going to medical school. Well, the first year, there were a lot of shocks. And the shock to the system was, as I've already said, I really didn't know how to study. So I went through quite an adjustment. I was 18, away from home for the first time. Way back then, the legal drinking age was 18, and it was very common for all of my roommates, classmates, you know, we would go to the library, but on the way home, we would stop by one of numerous bars on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and drink beer. So I finally figured out, well, this is not going to work. And if I'm going to achieve my goal of getting into medical school, I've got to get on a straighter path here. So by the second semester, I had really buckled down. And while I would walk by many parties on the way to the library on weekends, I understood that I had a bigger goal in mind. So I did graduate, and I had very good grades. And I then went to medical school at Wake Forest University School of Medicine. For those of you who may not know much about Wake Forest, it is a Southern Baptist supported university and medical school. And of course, they have a law school. Many people know it best for its golf teams. And they're not perennial powerhouses in basketball or football. But many years ago, Arnold Palmer was a student there and put Wake Forest on the map with their golf teams, which today continue to be very strong. I was raised Southern Baptist, but my parents were very faithful and going to church, and that was how I was raised. So it felt quite natural to go to a faith-based, a faith-supported school, especially medical school. The hospital had a huge cross on it and sat right on Interstate 40 in Winston-Salem. And many patients would come in to the hospital and say, I was driving down the road and I saw the cross and I felt compelled to seek care here because I have a condition. Many different conditions presented that had been untreatable. So, after completing medical school, I began my training in Virginia, and that's where I met my wife of 44 years, and she's from Virginia Beach. We've been very happily married. We're opposites. We're total opposites, and opposites attract. I'm more serious and focused, and Kathy is lots of fun and just always high energy, and she makes sure that I kind of break away from my over-focused life sometimes. I practiced emergency medicine then in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Did that for 11 years and then ultimately switched to a more managerial administrative role as chief medical officer. I have a son and a daughter. My daughter lives in Spokane, and she's works remotely for a company out of Chicago. And my son lives here. He is the reason we are here. My son came to the University of Washington in 2008 during the financial crisis to seek his MBA. And along the way, he fell in love with the Pacific Northwest. He's quite the skier, and he felt like this was probably going to be his new home. And while I was still working at that point, we had the opportunity to visit frequently. And as the years passed, we began to think, well, this might be an adventure for us. So by the time I had retired from full-time work in 2015, we slowly made the plans to downsize and make the journey to the West Coast, something we have never regretted. What a beautiful place. What stunning geography with oceans, mountains, and volcanoes. And we've been challenged, particularly my wife, by the weather. And she probably has a little bit of seasonal affective disorder. So we arrived here in 2016. So we've been here for 9 years. We immediately, luckily, chose Timberlake as our first church to visit. And we have never given any thoughts about looking at any other church. We felt right at home there. We loved the people. We loved the culture, the philosophy of how services are presented. And we loved the consistent positive message that Ben and now Dave have delivered through the years. I did go back to work part-time. I had the opportunity to travel the country and go to hospitals all over the country to help them with patient safety and quality issues. It was truly a phase of my career that I enjoyed the most, although the travel wore me down. And in 2013, I retired. Sorry. In 2023, I finally retired completely. And I was living my best life. I felt good. I was in good shape. I loved to exercise. By this time, I had a granddaughter and had another grandchild on the way. Things could not have been better. So my relationship with God, I would characterize probably as one of convenience. When I needed God, He was there, but I would have to say I failed in adequately recognizing how many gifts He had given me through the years, and what a wonderful, wonderful life I had. And that all came crashing down in May of 2024. Something was not right with me from a health standpoint. And being a physician, I felt very in tune with my health. And I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So we all know that physicians, nurses, pharmacists, if you're doing anything in the healthcare professions, you should never treat and be very careful giving advice to family and to your loved ones. And that applies even more to yourself. And that's because we are human and we are limited in our ability to manage our biases. So, again, I thought something was wrong, but I couldn't figure it out. In May of 2024, we were in Spokane. My daughter had invited us to come and asked me if I wanted to walk with her in a 7-mile walk and run. And I said, sure, that sounds great. So I had been having a little bit of a cough, and my if you have grandkids, you know that you're frequently subjected to viruses. And I probably had had some version of the kitty crud and had a little bit of a residual cough, but I felt really good and headed out for the walk. Beyond running in my life, so I did walk and felt very good. And about 3/4 of the way through the walk, about mile 5, there's a very steep hill. It's over 1/4 mile long. And it's a real challenge and notorious in this walk as people approach this hill. And there are all kinds of people cheering you on and bands and people in costume when you reach the top of the hill to help you celebrate that you've reached at least the crucial point in the walk or run and that you should be able to finish up strong from that point. As I was going up the hill, I began to wheeze and I thought, well, I know I've had some wheezing in my life before, but this was a surprise because it usually is associated with severe bronchitis. For me, I never had asthma, but for me, when I had infection in my lungs, I would get what's known as bronchospasm and begin to wheeze. I started to wheeze a lot, so I slowed down my pace. I made it to the top of the hill, and I did complete the race. And that night, I just didn't bounce back like I felt I should. And 2 days later, I became quite ill with a fever of 105. Very severe cough. I went to an urgent care center in Spokane. They did not do an x-ray or blood work, but the nurse practitioner there said, "I'm pretty sure you have bacterial pneumonia, and we're going to put you on 2 antibiotics." Well, immediately the fever diminished, and I started feeling better. The treatment for community-acquired pneumonia, however, is only 5 days antibiotics, which for most cases is what is required and is sufficient. And we all know the dangers of over-treating with antibiotics. But by the end of the 5th day, we were back home. It was a Friday. And my fever came back. I started coughing and wheezing again. So I immediately went to the emergency department at Evergreen, and they did a chest x-ray. They did see a little bit of pneumonia, and they did some blood work. And the physician was really focused on my white blood count, which was elevated, which again would indicate bacterial pneumonia. So he felt like the pneumonia had not been adequately treated from a time standpoint and gave me the 2 antibiotics again. So when I woke up the next morning, I went through all my blood work again to take a very close look at it. And unfortunately, something jumped out, and that was I was anemic. And it's kind of anemia where your red blood cells get very large, as opposed to iron deficiency anemia where your blood cells are very small. So this was not a good sign. Monday morning, I was in to see my primary care physician. And we began the journey of a workup, and I won't go into all the details because the workup and the path to a diagnosis took way too long. And I can say that now in retrospect, and I had some anger over that I've had to work through. Excuse me. So by the time I was diagnosed, it was early August, so almost 2.5 months. By that point, my anemia had worsened, and I had what's known as hyperviscosity syndrome. And that comes from the multiple myeloma being cancer of the bone marrow, particularly of some of the white blood cells that fight infection, and hence my episode with pneumonia. And those cancer cells are still trying to make antibodies, but they're not working effectively, and it begins, those ineffective antibodies begin to float around in your bloodstream to the point that your blood becomes like molasses, hyperviscous. And that had caused severe headaches. I couldn't focus. I wasn't confused per se, but I was having trouble really focusing on the issues at hand. So I wound up in the hospital. Treatment was initiated. I had blood transfusions. I was in congestive heart failure. And one of the most devastating lingering impacts of multiple myeloma is being in the bone marrow. It affects your bones. It begins to pull calcium out of the bones. And I was having severe back pain. And that back pain was coming from compression fractures, what are called pathological fractures, meaning bones will fracture under minimal normal daily activities with no unusual stress or injury to the bones. They will fracture. The radiologists, when ultimately they did the PET scans, CT scans, and MRI scans, the radiologists just said innumerable rib fractures and compression fractures of the spine. Radiologists usually are very good and love to count fractures, but just kind of puts it in perspective. I just had my skeletal system, and to this day is something I've not recovered from. But I lost 5 inches in height, and I had this whole new anatomy with kyphosis, meaning my spine leaned forward, and to this day I sleep in a recliner. So you probably have all heard of the stages of grieving, where, and this is not exact science, but has kind of been talked about for years, that we go through these phases of grieving, and when you become sick, you're grieving the loss of your life as you knew it, your good health, and the struggles to deal with all that. Those stages have been categorized as denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And, you know, it's people go through some phases. Some people go through many more phases. There are whole books and there are psychologists and psychiatrists who have studied this for years. But to keep it simple, yes, initially I was in denial. And how could this happen to me? I would wake up every morning and my first thought would be that I hope that was just a bad dream. I really hope and I pray that I didn't have multiple myeloma. I couldn't understand why or how it happened. I spent my life studying good health, good nutrition. Felt like I had done everything I could in my life to avoid heart disease and to avoid being at risk for cancer. But we all know it doesn't matter. And with cancer, it's about mutation of cells, and those mutations can happen. They happen in our bodies every day, and normally your body takes care of them. But if one cell is not dealt with, or if your body begins to produce too many cells for the body to deal with, things go the wrong direction. So, yes, I was very much in denial, And then I have already told you, I was very angry about particularly the healthcare system and how had this not been picked up earlier, how long had I been anemic, why did the diagnosis take so long. Certainly my issues with my spine could have been dealt with earlier and may not have left me with lasting effects that I'm still dealing with. And a lot of people become angry with God, and I didn't necessarily feel angry with God. So I wasn't angry with God, but I was very perplexed. And I quickly realized that part of my confusion had to do with my lack of a sustained, ongoing, solid relationship with God. So again, my relationship had been one of convenience, and I felt like God will be there when I need him. And I began to ask God, why? And what is your plan? And is this the end? Because in the fall of 2024, I felt so sick. I really didn't feel like I was going to be alive by the end of the year. And I had so many emotions around that, including I felt like I had let my family down. I've always been there for my family, and this felt like I have failed. I felt like I have failed in some way, that I couldn't be my old self, someone the family could rely on physically, emotionally, and how much longer would I be around? And at this point, now I had two grandchildren. My grandson was born in May of 2024, born a couple of months prematurely and just did beautifully. And he's a normal, healthy, now 18-month-old. My granddaughter is now 3, and they are such a delight, and so they bring so much joy into our lives. So I really began to ask God, what is the plan here? Why is this happening? And is this going to be the end of the road for me? Or is there a chance for me to survive this and to begin to get back to some semblance of a normal life? And I bargained and asked God to help and intervene in this situation, to help me physically and emotionally, and that in return, I would be a more faithful communicator, and I would hopefully be able to share this story with others, to let them know what great work God has done in my life. So I was very, very anxious at that time, and I was afraid. And so I really never had what I considered depression. It was more the anxiety. It was the anxiety of the unknown. What does the future hold? How is this all going to play out? And it was truly compounded by some of the medications I was given. I ultimately made my way to Fred Hutch, where they have, with God's help, worked miracles with me in my physical health, with being able to cope with the limitations of my spinal damage and bony issues. And that included a 5-drug regimen, one of which was corticosteroids. If you've ever been on those, you know that they, in and of themselves, can cause a lot of anxiety. I couldn't sleep. I was averaging 2 hours of sleep a night. Every breath, I felt so anxious. And on top of that, I had the hyperviscosity syndrome and then just the fear of the disease itself. I did not go out of the house for about 3 months. And for the first couple of months, I really asked my wife, please don't leave me alone. Not that I was afraid of doing anything to myself. It was just that anxiety and fear of I couldn't be alone. I just felt like I could not be alone. It was so uncharacteristic of me. But as you know, God is there. God stepped forth, and despite my failures and shortcomings as a human being and as a Christian, God was there to help me and to get things turned around. So I'm pleased to tell you that today, I'm not in remission, but I've made tremendous improvement in terms of the cancer. There is no cure for multiple myeloma. I've accepted that. And that is sort of the final stage of the grieving process, that we accept what fate we've been given. And I feel very comfortable with where I am at this point. So I've gone from 5 drugs down to 2. And my cancer, when the initial bone marrow biopsy was 95% cancerous. I think you can appreciate that's not compatible with life on a long-term basis. And today that number is down to 4%. So, and the 4% of cancer that remains in my bone marrow is having negligible impact on my health. My blood counts are back to normal. I'm no longer anemic. The PET scan shows that there's no active disease in my bones. The fractures are all healing. And there's some damage from the myeloma that may never go away. But I've been the fortunate benefactor of a very gifted physical therapist who has helped me really push the boundaries of what I was told originally I would be able to do again. And at this point, there's very few things I can't do. I know I'll never be my 100% physical self again, but I can play with the grandkids. I can pick up the grandkids. Again, some things I was told originally I would probably never be able to do again. Yes, they still expose me to viruses, and that is a concern, but over time, some of my natural immunity has strengthened and reemerged, and I am able to fight those infections on my own. So that is just, in my mind, an incredible journey of how God has helped me turn my life around physically and has worked through the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists, the amazing care team, the physical therapist at Fred Hutch have really been able to help me get back to a point where I feel like I'm living a normal life. Just a week or so ago, my wife and I were out walking on one of the beautiful fall days that we had back in October. And she said, "I really feel like you're back to your old self. You act and behave and have the energy of your old self." And that was a thrill for me to hear and confirmation of just how far I've come. So in those darkest days, God was there. He came forth when I asked. He's always been there. I just have been negligent in recognizing his constant presence. But again, I begin every day now with a prayer of thanks. I thank God for this wonderful life, for this beautiful earth, for my extraordinary family who have stood by me, who have far and beyond been the inspiration for me to continue to work hard, to continue to exercise, to take my medications faithfully, to listen to my doctors, to adhere to the treatment regimens, even when there are some side effects to those drugs. It's all worth it. It's all part of the plan. So my future is very unclear. Multiple myeloma is notorious for being different for every patient. It is completely unpredictable, and it all depends on the genetic behavior of the disease, continued mutations. But my oncologist has been straightforward with the fact that someday, we don't know when, could be tomorrow, could be 5 years from now, that the disease will take another turn for the worse, and there will be new mutations. Meantime, thank goodness, there's ongoing research, and the miracles that God has worked through our scientists to find new treatments for all forms of cancer is unbelievable. I remember very clearly my first patient on oncology service in medical school. This was back in 1978, which would have been about 47 years ago. The patient was anemic and had back pain. And my senior resident told me, "Anemia and back pain are multiple myeloma until proven otherwise." So we did a bone marrow biopsy. And back in those days, the oncology team, including the medical students, would do the bone marrow biopsies. Now they're frequently done by interventional radiologists under fluoroscopy. But we did the bone marrow biopsy and confirmed the diagnosis of multiple myeloma. And we patted ourselves on the back for making the diagnosis. But then the story was very, very gloomy. There was no treatment. There were no options. And it was basically, we told the patient to get your affairs in order, that you probably have 4 to 6 months to live from the time of diagnosis. And that was the story for multiple myeloma and for many other cancers almost 50 years ago. So today, through God's willingness and support and ability of our scientists to conduct research and to learn more about the human body, to learn more about the forces of cancer and why it occurs and how we can treat it, there are remarkable stories of people who've been able to turn their cancer battles around. Meantime, I thank God every day, and I look forward to every day, and I know my battle is ongoing, but the thrill of having additional time with my family is something I cannot thank God enough for. So I wish you all the best, and I hope you will remember, whether you talk with God every day or not, God is constantly present in your lives. And despite my not recognizing that as faithfully as I should have, He has been there for me when I needed Him, and I know He's with me every day, and I am truly thankful for that. God bless you all. Thank you.
Wow, what a story. Thank you, Greg, for sharing that story with us. There are so many parts, so many great parts to Greg's story. I hope one thing that didn't go unnoticed as you listened to it was that Greg is an incredibly smart medical practitioner, but is also looking for God and for what's next. He knows exactly what the medical teams need to do and how this will help him, but he also knows that God directs everything. And that means God's behind what the doctors do, what they discover, and how to treat it. He is the guide. No matter how smart or capable someone is, God is always the driver behind them, guiding him to what needs to be done. And I hope everyone caught that, because knowing the background of where Greg came from and his medical career, I think it's just illuminating to see how God directs everything, even when you may know a lot of what's going on. I also loved how open he was about discussing the idea of bargaining with God. I think that is a powerful word, of bargaining. I would venture to say that most, if not all of us, have done some kind of bargaining with God at some point along our cancer or even life journeys. I know I certainly have. And do I think God looks down on this? Absolutely not. I think it's just another way for us to start surrendering to Him. And while He might not get what we're negotiating, or why we may not get we're negotiating for, it is definitely opening a dialogue with God. And that's what He wants from all of us. I also really appreciate how God worked with him and showed him many miracles along his journey. Some are definitely bigger than others, but still miracles. And like getting him into one of the best cancer facilities in the country, known here as Fred Hutch, and that God never left him through any of this, even through his anxiety and all of the other issues that he dealt with. And there were definitely all of his shortcomings and failures that God never left him. And as we love to say around here, We are never alone because God is always with us, always. But in the end, Greg, like me, thanks God every day for his journey and guiding him through it and giving him deeper faith that isn't convenient but active. And when we treat God like he is a person in our lives 24/7, every day of the week, we get a lot more hope and encouragement and peace. At least I have received all of that, and it's because I do know God is with me all the time. And God is absolutely with us all the time. We are never alone. So once again, thank you, Greg, for sharing your story with all of us. It was honest, from the heart, and definitely inspiring. It gives us all much more hope and encouragement and peace as we all walk through our own journeys with cancer. I know it definitely inspired me listening to it. So thank you for listening. And remember that no matter what is happening to you in your journey with cancer or your journey in life, we are never alone. Jesus and the Holy Spirit are always with us and ready to help us. All we have to do is ask. Then give it all to Jesus and let him go to work. And remember, if you would like to share your story with others, please visit our Share Your Story webpage and fill out that short form, and we'll be back in touch with you and capture your story to share and impact others' lives. So until next time, may God bless you, and I hope you have a very blessed day. Thank you for listening.